child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then.
You know. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. We are fat and happy here at the Jedi Cole Universe after a successful Thanksgiving all across the board. I'm really glad that I got to go back to Ohio and visit with friends and family for a little while. And Cole, what did you do for your Thanksgiving?
Well, we actually hosted the better part of the Jedi Cole family, so I had my wow. brother and sister-in-law, both my parents, both their spouses, and myself, Mrs. Jedi Cole, and it's a crap ton of amazing good food.
So all the Jedi Coles from the Yavin Jedi Coles got to come. That's good.
Yeah.
The Jedi Coles?
That's right. All kinds of... of the Houston clan were over here, and
very nice.
And we got to get the house a little bit more in order before Dollar Store Christmas in just under 2 weeks.
That seems so close. It seems like
I know. It's even closer when you're putting it on.
And speaking of Christmas, a little pre-plug.
Yes.
A week after this, you'll hear this episode or this issue of Hey Kids Comics. We have yet another issue of Hey Kids Comics Live coming to you from Deep Ellum on Air, in which we do the big toy book of Hey Kids Comics, where we're going to talk about all of the Christmas goodies, your last minute buys, your finds, your awesome comic paraphernalia to get the comic lover for Christmas. It's going to be really awesome. We can't wait to do it. But that
there's
is
some amazing stuff out there from
so good.
You know, top line gifts to stocking stuffers to God only knows what else.
Right, just awful things. So, but that isn't why we're here tonight. We're going to take it a little easy tonight. We had a really hard run up to Thanksgiving. We did a lot of shows back to back to make room for the holiday. So we're still coming down. We're on a little bit of a tryptophan high. So we ate all the birds from the last issue. That's
right.
Why.
Every last one of them.
Science. It was strictly for science.
We go in for the wings.
But tonight, we talk about another one of the, and I don't know, Cole's going to have to correct me on this. I'm no scientist.
I forgot to mention on the last show, there was yet another Ariel character that we neglected in the Muggerville universe. Of course, it was Buffalo Wing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Buffalo Wings, who basically is just this big, shaggy, winged character. Doesn't really do anything. Not even... biggest problem with Buffalo Wing is a lot of people will approach him and try to lick him, taste him, because they think he's spicy.
Right, well, yeah, I mean, and
oddly enough, he tastes a lot like Lysol smells.
And the other side to that is, I mean, he also, you can't discount his sidekick, Celery.
Celery, yes.
Celery. He doesn't. He just a lot of water and not a lot of flavor on that one. He's off to the side a lot.
He doesn't even taste like anything. You
know? Right. That's his superpower.
Yeah, he's just completely tasteless.
There
you have it.
He's like the milk toast mystique, if you will. It's a Buffalo Wing. Thank you, Cole, for Buffalo Wing. So today we talk about our finest of companions, those layabouts, those ne'er-do-well crazies, the cats in comics.
That's right. Well, you know, the thing about it is, it's inevitable that with all the birds that we had here last week, we would be attracting the cats this week.
Right, one of the reasons that this show has been kicked down the road quite a bit, because we've been trying to figure out exactly what to do with it before we decided just to do it. And one of the reasons that it's been kicked around quite a bit is because we wanted to really pay an homage to a really dear friend of the show and of the Jedi Cole universe and to fandom in the DFW area in and of itself.
For many, many, many years.
So many years. And that would be a friend of the show that you know, became a friend of mine through Alcon. It was a friend of Cole's for much longer than just Alcon. And that is Percala. If you've ever had the joy, the sheer, unadulterated joy of being around Percala, it's infectious. And she
was just dynamite. Percala got her start effectively auditioning for Who Wants to Be a Superhero, the second season.
Right.
She didn't make the cut for that, but that didn't stop her being an amazing superhero in her own right. She went out and, you know, was just out there doing things for the kids.
Right.
She actually approached myself, Mrs. Jedi Cole, years ago when we were putting on little tabletop toy shows called the Piece of the Action Collectibles, mm-hmm. Comic Toy and Collectibles Swap Meets. And she asked if she could come out and just, you know, kind of hang out and entertain the children or, you know, any kids who may have been around. And I'm like, are you kidding? I'll give you a table. If you have something you want to sign pictures and of yourself and sign autographs for the kids as a treat, then please do. We'll make sure you're – and she just became the VIP for that show.
Right.
And or the MVP, I'm sorry. And the and a VIP.
Both, actually, yeah.
And it was just – you know, just a whole lot of fun. Yeah. And for many, many years, she was at conventions and doing face painting for as long as she could manage, and just all around dynamite.
Right. So if you see Percala, you know, and we're not done. We probably will never be done talking about Percala because so many amazing stories and different things and awesomeness.
And if you go to the United States of Geekdom, and I believe. If you just punch in on a search, Percala, P-U-R-R-K-A-Y-L-A, you're bound to find her popping up all over the place.
Oh, yes.
She was a big fan and big friend of that show, and we, our knowledge of her may even date back to Amazing Comic Cast.
I believe it did. It might even have dated back to Amazing Comic Cast before I was a member of Amazing Comic Cast.
Could well have.
Yeah.
I'm so terrible with my chronology, but...
So yeah, find her wherever you can, and definitely support whatever she's doing, because I guarantee you it's a good cause, and she is an amazing. She has this gravitational pull. It's like, look, it's, you know, it's like entering a black hole without an event horizon. It's just, it sucks you in and makes you a better person, and watching her with kids do face painting and whatever she's doing is just a joy.
She just adores kids and loves to just make kids smile, and that's what the Percala was all about. I mean, you know, she was always helping us out with things like Superhero Sunday at Alcon, mm-hmm. or just being out there collecting donations for Kitty Co. Cat Rescue, and just all kinds of stuff.
So. Whatever she could do. And so thank you, Percala, for everything you've done, and we are certainly
not... This show is definitely dedicated to you.
Yeah, and we are not done talking about you on Hey Kids Comics by any stretch of the imagination. Now on to the canned tuna of the show, if you will, the animals of the hour, the cat.
That's right. We're going to... This is the cat's meow of Hey Kids Comics.
Oh, this is going to be the punniest episode of Hey Kids Comics that's ever existed.
We're going to really challenge...
the idea of humor? Yes, we are.
And the last issue as well.
So, because it really...
Which one's going to get the most animal puns out of a single issue?
It really goes tooth and feather with last issue, because... the differences, and I was thinking about this when I started really thinking about the show, the differences is when you think about, because most every bird, with the exception of Turducken, most every bird character is a bird of prey. It is a hunter.
Yeah.
It scans the sky, you know, looking for something to swoop down mightily and you know, with great alacrity and snap up in its beak or claws and fly off. It's something to be feared.
Wow, I was waiting for, like, you know, David Attenborough to suddenly be invoked. The bird of prey superhero is most commonly found in the skies over many metropolitan cities.
The opposite, but cats are so the opposite. Like, I realize we're not talking about, but even if you go to, like, the zoo, because we've talked before how I recently went to the zoo. If you look at the birds at the zoo, They're always aloof, aware, knowledgeable of your presence. They yes. know you're there. They've got an eye on you and everyone else there. They can take you. They can take you like Liam Neeson in a heartbeat. They're the Liam Neeson of animals, I think.
They're literally asking if you've seen Jurassic Park, because really, but for the fact that they don't have to work for their food anymore,
right.
they'd be just as happy to kill you.
Exactly. Now, as I look around the room I'm sitting in right now recording, and when I went to the zoo, cats are just the laziest bastard creatures that have ever been on God's green earth. I'm looking at two cats right now, just laying there, don't care that you're here, give no never mind to your presence, and the difference is night and day in my mind. And I think my biggest problem with the idea...
I'll have to challenge you, though. You know, cats in general, the overall world population of real cats are not lazy. They're hardworking hunters. It is that percentage of them that allowed domestication or a semblance thereof.
Right.
It becomes like this Kaiser Sose kind of thing. You know, like the greatest trick the cats pulled off was making you think you own
right.
them.
Right. It's like the Neil deGrasse Tyson when he was on Cosmos, when he was discussing how wolves became domesticated, which in turn is how man became domesticated, which is
yes, exactly.
the wolves allowed you to domesticate them because they were sick of it, essentially. So, no, you're absolutely right, but they also, different than birds, cats have a certain set of character traits that I don't know outside of, you know, the hunting and the agility and the power. They also have that ability to not give two shits about what's going on and walk away at any time.
They are the masters of indifference.
I wish that more cats in comic books had mastered that art, because I think it would make a much more interesting comic book if, like, the Legion of Supervillains was meeting, and all of a sudden, you know, it's like, where's Cheetah? And she's just leaving the room for no reason, just, I don't care. Just walking out of the satellite, you know, walking out of the weird dome-shaped Legion of Doom headquarters, well, I'm gonna go over here now. I got something to do in the other room. There's nothing in the other room. Shut up. Like, that's what I want to see. Oh, man. Yeah, so...
Yeah, because you don't see things like, you know, Catman isn't in the middle of a pitched battle with Batman and Robin and then just, you know, turns around and walks off. And like,
right.
No, you don't get to do that.
You don't get to do that.
I do get to do that.
I do what I want. I'm Catman.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. So where do you are the scientist of our group. You're the gentleman scientist of us. So where do you want to take this thing right now?
Well, it's, you know, much like we did last time, what we kind of, perhaps to the surprise of some, scienced it up a little bit. Take a look at, you know, part of the anthropology as well as the biology of cats.
Right.
Because cats have been a major part of so many cultures.
Again, yes, you're absolutely right.
You know, the Egyptians, I think, embraced anything that lived and breathed around them that they could anthropomorphize.
It's true.
From reptiles, amphibians, you know, reptiles, birds, mammals, fish. Pretty much fish were about the only thing nobody seemed to care about.
One man cared.
That's right. The one man who worshipped the lone fish god.
That's right.
The ancient Egyptians. Pluteth. A lot of people are completely unfamiliar with Pluteth.
Pluteth, huh?
Pluteth.
Yeah, okay.
Pluteth was also known as the gasping god.
I'm not going to look it up. I am going to stand by the fact that Pluteth exists as a thing.
Yeah. We now have mark my words. We like, you know, how people complain about the raptors in Jurassic Park being too big, and then they unearth the Utahraptor.
Yeah.
And it's like, screw you, paleontology. Mark my words, when they're going to be like somebody digging around in Abu Simbel, and they're going to find some sort of like glyph or a cartouche featuring the previously unknown god Pluteth, the grasping god.
You're creating your own. You're definitely creating your own world.
Pluteth into retro existence. I'm going to have the first actual physical retcon. I'm sipping my thoughts back in time to the Nile.
Okay. I'm going to let that go.
But where I was actually heading with this before I went swimming upstream, as it were,
or downstream.
But, you know, cats were a very big part of Egyptian culture to the point of being deified. Yet, you know, the perhaps even more primitive, oddly enough, European cultures would vilify them.
Right.
And so, you know, there's an ancient love-hate relationship that we have with the cat. I think it's for that very reason. It's a very aloof sort of character. So it seems a natural thing to adopt, much like, of course, Catwoman or the Marvel analog with Black Cat, who apparently at some point had the mutant power of bad luck projection.
Yes, she did.
And define such a thing.
She had like probability manipulation. It like she was like the opposite of Longshot. Like,
okay.
Like she could project bad luck onto people. They would trip over their shoelaces or on a banana peel. Or
it was what we call the hee-haw syndrome. You know?
Yeah.
Bad luck, I'd have no luck at all.
It's vaudevillianous, is what it is.
She's a vaudevillian.
She's a vaudevillian.
Stood around dropping banana peels behind her.
She has whipped cream pies and banana peels. And
that's right. Slide and, whistles.
And doors that open and the whole facade of the building falls down around you.
That's right. But, you know, the cat also represents that kind of stealthy, you know, being able to hop up on a shelf full of Ming Dynasty vases and not knock a single one over.
Right.
Yet, if someone tried to, you know, capture said cat, then it, all chaos breaks loose. You know, left to their own devices, they are capable of defying gravity.
I've seen it. I've seen it happen.
I've actually seen that firsthand so often, it's frightening. But, you know, the cat's a good choice because in addition to that, there's also some raw power behind your wild cats, your big cats.
Right.
Your non-domesticated cats. So the invocation, I think, is often what's at play there. What are you invoking when you're a cat burglar with Catwoman or with Black Cat versus what are you invoking when you're like... Cheetah from
exactly
DC, or Puma from Marvel.
It's not a Puma.
I think that's what Cougar's tagline was. I'm not the Puma.
I'm not the Puma. The brilliance is that unlike a lot of other animals, right? When you the different named big cats that we all know. When we say the name of those cats, it invokes an instant image. So Tigra, you get an image in your brain of Tigra, you know, of what she would look like you said with Puma or Cheetah. And I think that speaks a lot to that kind of reptilian part of our brain that because if you've ever been in the presence of a big cat, even in an enclosure. They are majestic. They're the definition of majestic and horrifying. Like, this thing would and could literally destroy me with no questions asked. Like, this thing is, and you're absolutely right about that. So let's just do what we did and see what all the cat creations in comics.
We don't want to pussyfoot around this.
Oh, Cole, that's good. That's good. Cole's going to be the punniest tonight. Who do you look to as your kind of quintessential cat creation?
Obviously, I think if you just say, if you did word association, you said cat and comics. Catwoman is, I think, going to be the one that just jumps in people's heads. But you know, we've been kicking this particular topic around, this particular episode.
Yeah, we've been batting it around for a while.
Yes, indeed.
This, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, this issue of Hey Kids Comics is only for Cole and I.
we deserve this. We're taking a little bit of a vacation here.
Maybe for Lacey as well. We'll see.
Yeah, so true. But, you know, this one, it's kind of our cat's paw.
No. So, yes, Kay.
we're taking the tiger by the tail on this.
Oh, man. This is definitely not our paper tiger episode.
In a way, it is the paper tigers themselves. But, you know, certainly Catwoman is the one that would jump in everyone's mind. But there are so many, and it looks like from Andy's digging, there were many more than even I realized.
Yes, very much.
That, you know, I remember so many of these. When we were first kicking this, when we were first taking this on, one of the characters that came to mind was Panther.
Mm-hmm.
A rather obscure Teen Titans character who, you know, made a big splash as part of the Titans for a while there and then kind of faded into obscurity. I haven't really followed. Is there a new 52 Panther? I don't know.
I haven't seen one, if there is one. So, but they're introducing all kinds of things right now.
Multiplicity that's coming up here.
Right, Multiplicity. Michael Keaton's foray into comics. Yeah, we're going to have to talk about that at some point.
I can't remember what the hell it's called.
Multiversity followed by the Convergence, right.
Convergence, that's the one I couldn't come up with there.
Yeah, no, not yet, but we just saw the introduction of Jericho into the new 52. Uh-huh. So there's all kinds of they're moving in that direction pretty fast and furiously at this point. I think that the thing about the new 52 is they've kind of blew their proverbial load of main characters that they wanted to cover, and now they're looking back into the stacks to see if they can what they can pull out and make fun. So I'm really curious to see what they do now. But no, you're absolutely right. There are many, and Panther I remember vaguely. That's more your wheelhouse because you were a DC person back then, and I was definitely a Marvel person. But
and I don't really. I remember Panther had like some very cat-like qualities. She had like the cat ankle thing, you know, where she's like running around on her tiptoes, as it were, because of the way cat's legs are configured. But gosh, some of the other characters. I remember their Felicity from the Omega Men. I remember her very well because you know, she was like this jazzercise cat chick that. I think they kind of somebody retooled her because the images I'm finding of late tend to be more
less Suzanne Summers,
like de-skunkified Hepzibah from the Star Jammers.
Yes, which is a shame, by the way.
Absolutely,
no one should ever de-skunkify anyone. They should stay skunky and at all times. See, for me, I think the quintessential cat character is not a Catwoman or a cheetah or, you know, a black cat. For me, it was always Black Panther.
Oh yes, of course. Yeah, we're of course talking about the big cats, and Black Panther certainly is a huge. Takes full advantage of that, the invocations of the big cats and then the prey, you know, the giant prey animal that like jaguars and leopards and panthers.
And the one thing I really like about the portrayal, kind of the consistent portrayal, was first of all they introduced him and he wasn't racist-y. Even when they introduced him, he was arguably the first popular African.
I also have to go on record for saying the term racisty, very very unique term. There.
I coined it tonight actually in my brain right before it came out of my mouth.
Long list of terms coined on this and other shows.
Racisty. You know, even when he was introduced, he was arguably one of the most popular, or the most popular, black comic book character. It's African comic book character.
Yeah. I think one of the ways they escaped that becoming racist-y, especially with the connotations in the States of the term, you know, Black Panther, you know, that being adopted as a name, is by making him a national of an African country versus an American who donned
the
mantle of the Black Panther.
That's absolutely true. And speaking of what you just said, he wasn't just a national. He was the king.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and in that curious way that, you know, there was a lot of sort of thoughtlessness in the way writers approach things in a different era that was addressed in, like, the Star Trek The Next Generation. No, the captain does not get to go on every away mission. That's stupid.
Right.
No one would ever stand for that. And in that same way, you have characters like T'Challa, going is like, oh, bye, everybody. You can run the country while I go and play with the Avengers. And same with Prince Namor. It's like, you know, you kind of need to be on the throne.
Yeah, isn't there
doing king things?
But I really like that idea.
1287.
Because you had that idea, like if you look at royalty anywhere in the world, you had, you know, your Queen Elizabeths and your, you know, your Prince Charles's and your, you know, I'm sure an Archduke Francis Ferdinand.
Ferdinand actually did fight crime for a while.
Did he for a while?
Yeah, he was known as Two-Fisted Fervy. he actually was quite a pugilist, and utilized his skills to. A lot of highwaymen went down under his fist.
Okay. Stand and deliver type type stuff for Archduke Ferdinand.
They weren't expecting that kind of delivery. And it turns out, because I think the story goes, that he was sitting in his parlor one night and realized that most criminals are a cowardly glass-jawed bunch.
So he had his monocle in. And
that's right.
Okay.
Went out and, geez, take me out to the, let's see if we can get mugged.
Sitting in his trophy room. It was, okay, I get it. He had a certain regal sense to him at all times when written.
Being fisty was a bad idea for a superhero name.
Bishop Fisty Face was...
That's right. The Knuckle Sandwich.
I'm going to knuckle dust your face off, Angelo. But the Black Panther always had a regal air to him when written.
Absolutely.
And he had that idea of nigh-Egyptian quality cat, you know, that you don't get it in...
Well, yeah, you did have came from a culture that venerated the cat, or at least one species of cat, very highly.
Right, and not to get too Andy on this topic, right? But you definitely get a line of, you know, you get a line of delineation you definitely get two separate camps here. You get the male cat camp and the female cat camp in comics.
That's so true.
Because you've got Catman, you've got Black Panther, you've got the Puma.
You know, and also when we were talking about this episode, you know, I said, you know, if you say comics and cat, Catwoman is one, you know, the first thing that comes to mind. She's the perfect choice. But I think, you know, also, the first thing that comes to mind in people is all the feline cat characters, and they're not thinking of the male camp.
Well, and the reason for that is I think one of the reasons for that is that the feline cat characters that are female have all been. It's very easy to hypersexualize a female cat character.
That's so true.
And so anytime you see a female cat character, they're always kind of this sanguine, you know, stretched out on a couch, you know, upside down, hanging from a rope, you know, all over the place. Tigra. We've talked about Tigra for how many episodes about how she, you know, people can talk about She-Hulk all they want, but Tigra was really written as the hooer of the Marvel Universe for a long time. But,
yeah, we did. We have gone on rather at length about Tigra's tail in the air
mentality, right?
Little bit of cat tail going on there.
It is a connotation of the cat world, as well as a connotation of the cat character that's the way they're going to behave. And then on the male side, you get your Catmans and your Black Panthers and your Pumas who are always portrayed as this proud, you know, lion jaguar of the jungle.
They're all the Leon type, you know, very much with very few exceptions, like Marvel's Cheetah, who was actually the precursor to Nightwing's original costume. One of the first to really sport the high collar proudly with the bare chest. But yeah, and I think one of the other reasons you see that happen a lot is that, oddly enough, when I was a little kid, I used to think that, because we had male dogs and female cats, I thought all dogs were boys and all cats were girls.
Right.
And there are, so, like you're saying, it's easy to feminize and sexualize the cat idea. And, but also, by and large, the term catty is applied is a very feminine
right
term. And so I think that's also part of where you're seeing that come from, where your natural instinct is to think, okay, it's cat-like is female, and we're maybe a dog-like characters,
right,
like man-wolf,
right. And I think, I really think that's a disservice. And again, we're starting to see that turn a little bit now in comics, with kind of the new Catwoman, the new iterations of Catwoman that have been around for a little while now. And I really like the way that they're portraying that, like even in the Gotham TV show with the Selina Kyle character, where she's very, very feline in her,
yes,
in her actions and her movements. They must have some sort of dance choreographer helping her with her movements.
Yeah, they're definitely coaching her to take a very cat-like approach to just like everything, even the way she just kind of moves through space in general.
Right. So what about your worst of this? Is there a worse cat character that you would?
Wow.
Yeah.
That, I think, one of the among the worst, and it's just a product of what it was, or perhaps memorable but kind of laughable at the same time, were the Tiger Men of Commandy.
Oh yes.
But then you all said Gorilla Men, and I think you had a few Dog Men still around.
Somebody did a lot of watching of Planet of the Apes before they wrote Commandy. That's just, and let their imagination run wild.
Yes. Indeed. A world where every species evolved from man? except man. And, of course, I remember also, I think with Crisis on Infinite Earths, I discovered the Shazam family again.
Yes.
At one point I had like a Shazam family comic book I picked up on a road trip one time, and we're just, ruining it from reading it cover to cover over and over, mainly because there was some crazy old kook who, in some lost world that they wound up in, who had all these war mammoths, and I was just silly for anything prehistoric.
Yeah.
And I remember, once I started delving deeper into the Captain Marvel mythos, I discovered there were some equally laughable things, even more so than Uncle Marvel, who was apparently just this dirty old creep who would disrobe and pretend he could turn into one of the Marvel family. But was Mr. Talkie Tawny.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Talkie Tawny. And what's interesting about Mr. Talkie Tawny, I would have to do some digging because I cannot remember the character's name. The series from Dark Horse, Astro City, which was, little vignettes, basically. Every story arc was sort of a little vignette into realizing some of the popular genre of comics as, let's take that sort of Watchmen-esque approach to what would it be like in the real world? It's like I'd read Alan Moore saying that with Watchmen, if you had superheroes, it wouldn't be like business as usual with a bunch of guys in tights with their legs spread a mile apart and their hands on their hips.
Right.
Everything changes. So what Astro City did was sort of posit that, extrapolate on that idea. And one of the issues, which was really fascinating, was they had a kind of obvious tribute to Mr. Talkie Tawny in the form of a cartoon that was willed into existence.
Okay.
So you have this, tiger in a zoot suit kind of character that was just a cartoon that some other character had the power, the psionic or whatever power, willed him into physical, genuine existence, and then got clobbered or killed or what have you. And here this construct, this entity that should not have ever existed.
Yes.
You know, is now like the only tune in Toontown. And it was really a very poignant, kind of sad, kind of fun tale that took the idea of Talkie Tawny and made it like, okay, what if you were charged to come up with a way to make that real?
Okay.
But I think that in the comics, if I'm not mistaken, he was like, it was like this Calvin and Hobbesy kind of thing, or some little like stuffed toy came to life or something like that.
I think so, because of the magic, because of
pre-Flashpoint, pre-everything, pre-crisis.
Characters, yeah, I know, I agree. I do believe that was the case.
I'm not really certain, yeah, but I seem to think it was something like that, or, you know, it just sort of got willed into
right.
being like a real boy or something. So anyway, I kind of got a little.
No, I would like to combine the two. I would like to combine the two. The last show and this show for my worst, if I could. I think for my money, it's the Griffin.
Ah, yes.
That
yeah,
most.
Yeah, who gets to actually bridge the missing link.
He's the missing link between the two shows. But the thing I love about him is he's ferocious and huge, right?
Yeah.
He's giant, the body of a lion, but walks on two legs and has these giant, somewhere between, like, depending on how he's being depicted, it's either these giant, you know, eagle wings, or they're like bat wings, depending on who's depicting him. But so he's got all this ferocious power, like, you know, and but he's dumb. Like, that's he's never been written as anything but, like, you know, a henchman.
Yeah.
And for anyone, which one would think the combined aspects of the cat and whatever bird of prey they're basing him on would at least have the intuition, the base knowledge of how to be a royal badass. Because
well, I think there you're almost bringing in a little bit too much Captain Marvel there, because you're expecting him to have like the wisdom of the eagle or the owl and the strength of the eagle.
Right, but it's
all. I mean, he got the claws of the lion, so he's getting something out of the deal.
But you know, one would think at least, you know, if he's got the physiology of a lion and part of a lion and part of an eagle, at least, you know, you would have the senses, you know. But I don't think he's ever been portrayed as like 300 yards that way. There's a, you know, hiding behind a bush. You know, I sense movement over here. It's always like, hey, boss, I got us some loose meat sandwiches at the store.
Yeah, he's sort of like a Beaky Buzzard, you know. I'm bringing home a baby bumblebee.
Why didn't they ever bring Baby Huey into comics proper?
I don't know. There was, I think, a Baby Huey comic, but he never got to be like his own.
Right.
You know, always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
I want to see Baby Huey like fight the Hulk or something. Yeah, you know,
that would be a mashup I'd love to see.
Right.
Bobby Blakey.
As if you're not doing enough right now.
Baby Huey versus the Hulk. Once you get back from the mysterious East.
Do it right now while you're eating lunch and punching a guy and doing Lord knows what else you're doing. Do it up. What about cats in comics?
Yes, I was actually going to say my absolute favorite for woolly mammoth reasons, of course, is Zabu.
Ah, yes.
Sidekick to Kazar.
And character all in his own right, I might add.
Absolutely. Yeah, because very often Zabu gets to go and, like, do his Zabu things and independently of Kazar. Like, maybe, you know, go fight the stone people or whatever.
or whatever he does. No, the really interesting thing about I love there was a, and we haven't talked about this, and we should have, there was a comic called Pet Avengers.
Yes.
Which was fantastic because it involved you know, you had like Lockheed and all of the different animal superheroes, the sidekick animals. Zabu was in that at one point, just regal as shit, just not taking any.
Wasn't there like a house cat of some kind that was like somebody's cat?
There was. And you know, what's funny is the house cats are always getting drug into things. You know, because Superman's or Supergirl's cat. What was the name of that cat?
Streaky the Super Cat.
Streaky
and
the Super Cat.
Oddly enough, you know, because I was complaining once that apparently in preparing to, quite blatantly and irresponsibly rocket his infant son off into the great void, you know, rather than sparing him absolute certain death by disintegration of planet.
Right.
Which was one of the harder forms of execution to ever pull off. But
really elaborate. Just
yeah, very elaborate. It essentially takes the entire population with the criminal. But, you know, rather than that 100% guaranteed certainty of death, he just basically sent his son off to possibly very likely die of asphyxiation or exposure or
any number of things.
Or very, very loud ass cosmic rays like the Fantastic Four encounter.
Right. In space, no one can hear you scream except cosmic rays.
Yeah, but you can hear the cosmic rays tacking away like hail on a tin roof.
That's what happens when you go into the Dust Bowl universe.
That's right. But, you know, apparently, you know, years or decades or whatever it was after young Kal-El arrives upon our shores. All of them, every single one of them combined, because he arrived on Earth. So he arrived on mostly shores.
Overall shores, right.
Yeah, we're known, Earth is known actually as mostly shores by a lot of planets that don't have as much water as they do land.
Come see the shores of Earth.
At intervals, other animals from the domestic to the zoo animal variety, if you will, began to arrive in slower moving rockets, earlier models. You know, the Mark One finally shows up with that damn monkey in it, or the horse.
Right.
Apparently, part of experimenting with this is to send a horse off in such a slow ass rocket that the one you send your kid off in arrives years earlier. Or maybe it's one of those weird interstellar kind of things where the horse stopped off for like 10 seconds to take a piss in some world inside a wormhole, and all of a sudden that equated to 20 years.
With all due respect, the pony had to enact Plan B on another planet before he got to
that's
Earth.
So true.
So there's a whole planet of Kryptonian horses.
Like the little scene Planet of the Horses, which actually garnered a sixth film beyond... It's Planet of the Horses.
Hooves make it really hard to hold on to nets, so they often get rid of their prey escapes.
Yeah, but, you know, needless to say, it was also Planet of the Mares. So, Comet being a stallion.
Right.
And somebody's going to call me down on this. Well, you know, actually, Comet was a mare. I'm not really sure
shut up.
Which way that went, but,
shut up.
Who cares? This
right.
is just the story. This is a ridiculous joke about him landing on a damn planet of four bears yelling Equus.
But we're bought in now, and it's gone on too long, and we're going to finish
right.
it, damn it.
It's been built up too much.
It's led by their ruler, you know, Caligula.
But I was complaining that, like, every animal in the catalog was rocketed off in advance in slower rockets, and I was actually called down on that by Steve, who pointed out, no, in fact, Streaky is not Kryptonian.
So how did Streaky get its Streaky powers?
Streaky is actually a regular terrestrial cat with the magic.
Really?
Yes, Streaky is an entity of magic.
And that's another point. That is valid, because cats are often associated with witchcraft.
Oh, yes, witchcraft and...
And magic, and that leads me to my favorite non-anthropomorphic, pseudo-anthropomorphic side character cat, which is the Clarion the Witch Boy's cat.
Ah, yes!
Teekle? I don't know how to pronounce the name. T-E-E-K-L is how you spell it.
Probably Teekle, because it would sound like it's sort of an invocation of treacle. Or it could be Tequila, like Tequila Mockingbird, which many cats will do.
And to be brought over by the talk of Teekle is Carmen, my personal...
your personal Teekle.
My personal Teekle. No, but Teekle...
The cat needed to take a Teekle.
The Teekle cat was a reverse werecat that would go from normal cat aspect to werecat aspect, but not to human aspect. So it was the reverse werecat. But what it really speaks to is this idea of the familiar, which if you look at the cat as familiar, you get Agatha, what's her last name?
Oh, Agatha Harkness from the Fantastic Four, who was the governess.
Oh. The governess.
Governess for young Franklin Richards.
Even down to the point that the street on which the Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters is named after, was it Hamlet's cat? Gray Malkin Lane? I can't remember whether it was...
Yes, Gray Malkin Lane. I'm not sure of the origin, but
it's Shakespearean. I just don't know
Malkin
what.
Gray Malkin was supposed to invoke kitty cats.
Yeah. So, but there is a, you know, there's this idea of the cat being the protector and the familiar and being able to take missives to the to different demons or speak to ghosts and you know that's a whole idea that has been at least to some extent explored in comics.
Yes.
in various forms like Teekle. You'll see a lot of cats around in the more magic based characters. I think at one point Doctor Strange had a cat that wandered around the Sanctum Sanctorum.
And also in one of our, you know, kind of invoking some of our past episodes, both of this and the live show, Liko Wu, Shang-Chi's girlfriend and member of the Freelance Restorations, had a Siamese cat simply known as Siamese Cat. They actually did a little one-page spread showing, like, the effectively hero and villain characters.
Yeah.
You know, each with their own page. And it showed, like, all of the good guys who'd ever appeared up to that point in the comics, including, you know, the Rick from Casablanca-like character, and the Groucho Marx-looking Rufus T. Hackenstabber, whatever his name is.
Yes, Rufus T. Hackenstabber. If that's not the name, I think we have another villain for the Muggerville 7.
Yeah, it's something along those lines. If that wasn't it, it's very close. But in the middle of this big table that all those characters are shown seated around is the Siamese cat, and he's just simply known as Siamese Cat. I was like, really? Liko never bothered to name her cat? I mean, it's part of being a spy chick is you don't get a chance to.
But I think we would be remiss. I mean, you've got characters like Vixen, who can and Beast Boy. Who can at often?
Vixen is often envisioned as cat-like. I believe that her power object is cat-shaped.
It is her totem.
Yes.
Her totem to the is it the red? It's not the red, the green. I forget which is the animal based. It might be the red.
I believe the red. Yeah,
is definitely because your Swamp Things and your
Animal Man.
I think your Animal Man's was the red. Yeah, and Animal Man is another character that brilliant character that often would invoke cat. Unlike my favorite. Man that would invoke aspects of animals, which was a Manimal, which certainly needs a comeback and or a full series DVD Blu-ray release. So whoever's listening, that might or might
somebody
not
make that happen for this man.
That's right. I need Manimal in my life. But there's two characters in the Marvel Universe that we've touched on briefly that I think as we wind down the show, as we enter the last 10 or so minutes of the show, probably deserve a little more screen time, and that would be Tigra and what was her name? Was it Patsy Walker?
Yes, Hellcat.
Hellcat. Which?
Yeah, why did I not bring up? That's one of my favorite, like second or third string, almost nobody remembers characters.
Because if I remember right, Hellcat started as like one of those romantic comic book characters. Like,
yeah, actually, Patsy Walker started out as like a Millie the Model type.
Okay, okay.
Young romance character, and somehow got shunted into the greater Marvel Universe. Ran afoul of some bad guys, found a costume, and subsequently, I guess, felt empowered to kick some ass and tell Captain America what for. And next thing you know, she's an Avenger.
She was later
a Defender.
Right. She was almost the antithesis. She was fairly, I would say she was pretty well sexualized, but then again, all female characters at that point were sexualized. But I would say that she was sort of the anti-Tigra, because she would stand up for herself, and she would, like you said, she would tell people what's for and what's up, and you know, she ended up marrying Damon Hellstrom, otherwise yes. known as the son of Satan, which,
now that's the one where you go in like, I don't know that they gave him any coverage in Civil War, but how do you go into the registration office, son of Satan?
I'm the son of Satan. Like, Damon Hellstrom.
Oh, I don't know. Your father could be Satan.
I'm Damon Hellstrom. Yeah, he is, actually.
I want to see a follow-up grandson of Satan. I want to see their child go into superheroics.
Right. I want to see the adopted son of Satan. Like, you're not my real dad. Well, you don't want to meet Grandpa.
Yeah, really.
But yeah, did she have any, like, superpowers, or was she kind of like Catwoman?
I don't think she had any powers. At least initially. I think maybe they... Because I saw something where she, like, literally became a hell cat.
Right, I saw that, too.
Through some sort of magical... Because I probably talked about it on the show before a couple of times, but there's a British company called Eagle Moss that for many years, they currently are doing both Marvel and DC chess sets.
Okay.
But for many years, they published a magazine, both for Marvel and DC, and it's ungodly, like 200 issues plus specials, like 20 specials of Marvel alone. And 200 issues, and I was like, well, yeah, that's, you know, what hasn't done 200 issues?
Right.
Until you realize that that's 200 issues of a magazine specifically about a single character that comes with a fully painted lead figurine of that very character.
And amazing, too. Like, yeah, they aren't half-assed.
Yeah, most of them are just dynamite. A few of them, I think it was kind of hit and miss occasionally. But most of them, and I want to own most of them, and getting close. I just recently got my Medusa.
Nice.
From that line. But, you know, when you think about the fact that, but one of the things about, I got a little off topic there.
It's okay.
One of the things that was going on with that line is the magazine itself being focused on a single character. You got some really cool insights and stuff. And I remember just like being a little taken aback that she did go on to have like some sort of weird mystical powers. And I think a lot of times that's what happens is people like, well, you know, it's getting harder and harder to justify a chick in a costume who just kicks people and has like claw gloves.
Right.
So, hey, magic.
As it turns out, she has telekinetic.
It's magic. Oh, telekinetic powers.
And they came from the moon dragon breaking in and working around in her brain. and
did
unlocking.
Did he go into his trench?
And he went into his trench and unlocked the
magic powers. He got his trench.
So yes, she did indeed have some powers to speak of there, which is you know, good for her, but yeah, so it's about time we start winding this bad boy down, and there's so many cats that we didn't get to talk about. Shadow Cat, if you want to consider her a cat character.
There was during the indie boom, there was a character called like Night Cat or something like that.
Okay.
And one of the things that kind of typified the indie boom, like Harris Publications hired models, many, many models over the years, and frankly, in my opinion, the first and only one of the later ones really just rocked it, was to literally portray Vampirella not only at conventions, but also at like on the covers and stuff like that. And so there was always a face and and obviously a body of Vampirella. And Nightcat was one of these things where I think they literally developed this character around some model or some chick. Oh my God, it was a Marvel.
Was it?
I've forgotten that.
Was it?
It was a Marvel book.
Okay.
Created by Jim Salicrup, Barry Dulter, Stan Lee, Dennis Cowan, and Jimmy Palmanetti on a drunken rampage, apparently. they wanted to have a character who crossed over into the real world.
Oh, no.
So they hired actress-singer Jacqueline Tavares. Apologies to Jacqueline if we've mispronounced her name. To embody the real-life Nightcat.
Oh, man.
So they wanted like a rock and rolling dazzler who was actually real. And you can go look up Nightcat comic and see her in her costume that kind of gave him the idea for Psylocke with the very, very 80s or very 90s kind of lots of hip.
I would love to be able to get an interview with her.
Oh, yes.
She's like, what the hell happened here? All right. So let's start wrapping her up, giving some plugs. Thank you guys for indulging us in our on our comeback.
Oh, this was the cat's meow.
Oh man, jeez, so good. I'm glad we really went for it. We didn't retract the claws on this. We really went for it. So. So Cole, what do we got coming up here?
Well, we actually, as we said, we have our Christmas wish list or Christmas wish book coming up on the live show. Also, about 5 days before that, the live Rancor pit is going to steal that idea.
Nice.
And, of course, you can find us here on the Jedi Cole Universe, JediCole.com. You can look for us on Twitter, the Jedi Cole U. You can write to us. Please write to us at our own personal litter box of jcumail@yahoo.com.
That's right.
And we are working on getting some more stuff up on the Jedi Cole YouTube channel.
There you go. We'll
probably be in the new year be adding some more things like that. Also, if you want to go to conventions in the state of Texas, visit Convention Awareness Project Texas at www.cap-tx.info.
Nice.
And that will give you your resource for all conventions in the state of Texas. The 2015 listings are growing and growing.
I've seen a lot.
More and more things are being added. I'm just constantly finding out about more shows, which is great. Getting confirmations on ones that have been around for years.
And I've seen a lot more.
It's not too early to mention. We're going to be all over AllCon 2015 Madison in March, so be sure and stay tuned for more on that.
I've seen a lot of people out there getting more interactive with Convention Awareness Project, too, so that's great. If you do know of any conventions coming up, if anything's coming up, feel free, because it makes Cole's job a lot easier
if you do.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for joining us on yet another adventure in comics. We appreciate you being here and indulging us. And again, you know, we said it on Facebook. We haven't said it on the show. We wouldn't be doing this without you guys. So thank you in this season of giving and thanking. Thank you for letting us be a part of your life and your drives and your listening and. And, you know, like Cole said, feel free to interact with us. We would absolutely love it if you have any questions or anything you would like us to talk about. Hit us up in any of the various venues. And with that being said, buy, collect, enjoy, forget about, walk out of the room, walk back into the room, pretend you forgot something, comic books. That would be the cat version of that, yes. Say goodnight, Cole.
Meow.
Shit.
That was like, that was my MTM, you know, like the
little
MTM kitten.
That was good. That was good. I liked it. All right, guys. Join us next week. Good night, everybody.
Just the other day, he said, thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today. I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed. It said, I'm going to be like him. Yeah, you know I'm going to be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man.